nation of their country. Iraq is still restricted from opening accounts for its oil earnings outside of the U.S. Next, the U.S. Federal Reserve. Well, that's the entity that has imposed strict measures on Iraqi banks under various pretexts. One of them is preventing smuggling, it says, to countries like Iran, Syria, and Lebanon. The other, money laundering, just to name a few. We could take a look also at fraud and corruption that it has cited. Now, as a result, the U.S. Treasury Department has sanctioned 19 Iraqi banks. It has allowed 23 banks to remain operating as clients of the so-called currency window in the Iraqi Central Bank. But notice the first one, which is the most important one. Next up, we're going to take a look at the ripple effect here. This measure has caused a decrease in the central bank's deposit of dollars by about 40% in terms of the deposits in the Iraqi Central Bank, which has led to a decline in supply and therefore then a surge in demand. Now, this has resulted in an increase in the price of the dollar from 1,460 dinars, which was the official rate, to 640 dinars overnight in one case. Now, remember, this is from Iraq's own oil revenues. Iraq's oil funds, which due to the 2022 global oil price hike, is now close to $100 billion. And that is why it is said that Washington is weaponizing Baghdad's own dollars against Iraq. And as a result, it has devalued Iraq's currency and therefore hindering payments that Iraq can make. Let's find out what our guest thinks. Stanley Israel rejoins us. He's an organizer and researcher at the LaRouche Movement. Stanley Israel, welcome back to Economic Divide. Now, one of the stated goals that the U.S. has said behind this move to restrict the flow of dollars to countries like Iran, Syria, and Lebanon, for example, out of Iraq is because it wants to control the flow of Iraqi dollars. But doesn't that mean that Iraq's dollar dependence, in a sense, then, is detrimental to its own economy when the U.S. Acts this way?
Everything that's being done about the treatment of the dollar, both domestically and internationally, is evidence that anybody would be a fool to trust their wealth in dollars.
Okay, that's right to the point there. Let's find out what our next guest thinks, Saddam Mutalabi, if he agrees with that, from State of the Law Coalition. Saddam Mutalabi, welcome back. Taking a look at the way that the U.S. wants to control the flow of dollars, obviously one of the stated goals that it doesn't really say that that's really what it is to control the flow of dollars out of Iraq into its neighbors, such as Iran and such as Syria, for example. But doesn't that then mean that dollar dependence is not a good thing for a country, in this case, Iraq?
Well, the problem is that Iraq has, we have a trade relationship with the Middle Eastern countries, i.e. Iran, Syria, Lebanon, Saudi Arabia, Emirates, Turkey, all these countries we have a relationship with, and trade relations and trade balances with this country. So it is very natural and normal that there will be exchange of dollars through these countries with Iraq. But the Americans are trying to restrict that. These countries, in particular Iran, Yemen, Syria, and Lebanon, to deprive these countries of any international funds. Yes.
The U.S. has now decided to implement strict financial measures in a bid to allegedly combat corruption in Iraq. For months, the U.S. has restricted Iraq's access to its own dollars. The Central Bank of Iraq requests dollars from the Fed and then sells them to commercial banks and exchange houses at the official exchange rate through a mechanism known as the dollar auction. In the past, daily sales through the auction often exceeded $200 million per day. But U.S. officials now claim the system has been used to transfer money to countries like Syria, Iran, and even Lebanon, which are under illegal U.S. sanctions. It's alleged that 80% of the dollars sold through the auction has gone to neighboring countries. The U.S. has now forced Iraq's central bank to use an electronic system for transfers that required entering detailed information on the intended and recipients of the requested dollars. U.S. officials are said to have trained 100 Iraqi central bank employees to implement the new system. Now, this system has started rejecting transfers and invoices that used to be approved by the central bank. It is now reported that the amount of dollars sold daily in the auction plummeted to nearly $70 million U.S. dollars in January, compared to nearly $260 million 6 months earlier.
Hello and welcome to the Quick Take section. I'm Matti Apostian. Today, I want to talk about a growing trend of central banks dumping the US dollar. According to the IMF, the US dollar share of global foreign exchange reserves has dropped to a 25-year low. This graph shows that the share of US dollar assets in central bank reserves dropped by 12 percentage points from 71 to 59%. So how much money are we talking about? Foreign currency reserves worldwide shrank 10% in the first 9 months of last year. The global total dropped to $11.6 trillion at the end of September 2022, falling below $12 trillion for the first time since March 2020. That's according to the International Monetary Fund. There are some surprises when it comes to central banks decreasing their dollar reserves. One of them came from Washington's staunchest ally, Israel. For the first time ever, Israel's central bank said it would add the Chinese yuan while slashing its dollar and euro holdings. The explanation given? A move to diversify its reserve allocations and lengthen its investment horizon. The other surprise came from China. The country's president, Xi Jinping, while on a trip to Saudi Arabia, said it would require payments from Saudi Arabian oil sales to be made in yuan instead of US dollars. This would also include other Persian Gulf countries as well. Major foreign policy blunders by Western countries, in particular the US, have forced countries around the globe to think twice about having US dollar reserves. The UK freezing Venezuela's gold, the US freezing $7 billion in Afghanistan's assets, and the icebreaker, the US freezing the Russian central bank's assets worth $300 billion, are just some examples. In the case of Russia, analysts have said that US sanctions on Russia's central bank have undermined the US dollar for good. If central bank assets are no longer safe, then countries, especially China, could finally be pushed into dumping reserve dollars and cutting dollar reliance in trade, finance, and banking. That does it for this segment of the program. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to get in touch with us.
The dollar has definitely lost its popularity with central banks. Now, as Mehdi mentioned in the Quick Take section, when a government like the U.S. can reach into the coffers of the central bank of another country and then freeze its assets because it's not following the U.S. foreign policy agenda, then those countries will think twice about whether they're going to hold on to their dollars or not, which the trend is that they're going to let go of it and switch into another currency. That does it for this edition of the program. Hope you liked it. I thought it was okay, but your opinion obviously matters more to us. Thanks again for being with us. From the entire team here at Economic Divide, it's bye-bye for now.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. in the limelight.
In the U.S., a federal judge has ruled that former Vice President Mike Pence will have to testify before a grand jury in the Justice Department's investigation into efforts by former President Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 election. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British news outlet The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Former US President Mike Pence must testify in front of a grand jury investigating Donald Trump's election subversion and incitement of the January 6 attack on Congress, a federal judge has ruled on Tuesday, 28th of March. Multiple news outlets have reported the ruling, which remained under seal. Donald Trump and Mike Pence himself have both sought to stop Pence from testifying in the Justice Department investigation of Trump's attempt to overturn his defeat by Joe Biden in the 2020 presidential election. At issue are conversations between Mike Pence and Donald Trump leading up to the January 6 and the attack on the Capitol, which is now linked to 9 deaths, more than 1,000 arrests and hundreds of convictions. Lawyers for Donald Trump cited executive privilege, the concept that communications between the president and his aides are protected. Lawyers for Mike Pence argued he was protected by the separation of powers via the vice president's role as president of the Senate, which he performed on 6th of January 2021, the day supporters who were told to fight like hell by Donald Trump tried to block certification of Joe Biden's win. On Tuesday, 28th of March, James Burzberg, a judge in Federal District Court in Washington, D.C., reportedly rejected both arguments. Mike Pence is not expected to have to answer questions about his own actions on 6th of January 2021, when he was spirited away from a mob which chanted about hanging him while a makeshift gallows went up outside the building. Mike Pence has described that experience in a book, So Help Me God, published ahead of an expected run against Donald Trump for the Republican presidential nomination. He has also criticized Trump's actions in public remarks. Trump has said the January 6 Capitol attack was Mike Pence's fault. On Tuesday, Pence reportedly considered an appeal. Robert Costa, a CBS correspondent and co-author with Bob Woodward of the best-selling book, Peril, about Trump's attempt to cling on to power, said, Mike Pence has said he might see this all the way to the Supreme Court. The Harvard law professor, Lawrence Tribe, has described Mike Pence's defense as meritless, saying Pence needn't file a foolish appeal just to prove his pro-Trump credentials. He's done enough in that regard. Now he needs to show he's law-abiding. Reporting the ruling on Tuesday, the Associated Press said, it set up the extraordinary scenario of a former vice president potentially testifying against his former boss in a criminal investigation. Donald Trump faces legal jeopardy on multiple fronts. An indictment is expected in New York over a hush money payment to a film actress. His attempted election subversion is under investigation in Georgia at the federal level. Jack Smith, the special counsel appointed by the U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland, is also investigating Donald Trump's retention of classified materials. Authorities in New York mounted a civil lawsuit over Trump's business affairs. In the same state, Donald Trump also faces a defamation trial over an allegation of rape. Donald Trump denies all wrongdoing, claiming to be the victim of prosecutors motivated by political and racial animus. He continues to lead polling, however, regarding the Republican nomination for president. The Associated Press has also covered this story and tells us more. A federal judge has ruled that former Vice President Mike Pence will have to testify before a grand jury in the Justice Department's investigation into efforts by former President Donald Trump to overturn the results of the 2020 election. That's according to two people familiar with the decision who spoke on Tuesday on condition of anonymity. The ruling says Mike Pence will not have to answer questions about his own actions on 6th of January 2021, when a mob of Trump supporters stormed the Capitol building as Republican Pence was presiding over a joint session of Congress to certify Democrat Joe Biden's victory, according to one of the people. However, he would have to testify about any potential illegal acts committed by the former president. Mike Pence and his attorneys had cited constitutional grounds in challenging a grand jury subpoena issued weeks ago. They argued that because he was serving in his capacity as president of the Senate on that day, he was protected from being forced to testify under the Constitution's speech or debate clause, which is intended to protect members of Congress from questioning about official legislative acts. Trump's lawyers had also objected to Mike Pence complying, citing executive privilege. A Trump spokesman criticized the decision in a statement, accusing the Justice Department of continuously stepping far outside the standard norms in attempting to destroy the long-accepted, long-held, constitutionally-based standards of attorney-client privilege and executive privilege. There is no factual or legal basis or substance to any case against President Trump, they added, but did not respond to questions about how Trump's legal team might respond. Mike Pence said on Tuesday evening that his team was evaluating the judge's ruling and would make a decision whether to appeal in the coming days. I'm pleased that the court accepted our argument and recognized that the Constitution's provision about speech and debate does apply to the vice president, Pence said during an appearance on Newsmax. But how they sorted that out and what other testimony might be required, we're currently reviewing. The sealed ruling from U.S. District Judge James Boasberg sets up the unprecedented scenario of a former vice president being compelled to give potentially damaging testimony against the president he once served. And it comes as Mike Pence has been inching closer to announcing a run for the 2024 Republican presidential nomination, a decision that would put him in direct competition with his former boss. In addition to the Justice Department probes, Donald Trump is under investigation in Georgia and in New York, where a grand jury has been hearing testimony about hush money paid to women on Trump's behalf during the 2016 presidential campaign. That grand jury will not take up the inquiry again this week, two people familiar with the matter said on Tuesday, meaning any potential vote on a possible indictment will not happen until next week at the earliest. In Washington, Mike Pence was subpoenaed earlier this year to appear before the federal grand jury investigating election interference. In public appearances, he has cast that action as unconstitutional and unprecedented, and has said he would pursue the matter as far as the Supreme Court. He told ABC's This Week program that he might be open to testifying about matters not directly related to his congressional role.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Thank you. Donald Trump has become the first former United States president to be charged with a crime. A grand jury in New York has indicted Trump after a years-long probe into his alleged role in covering up a hush money payment to an adult entertainer ahead of the 2016 presidential election. According to the U.S. Department of Justice, an indictment is the process when a person receives a formal notice that it is believed that they committed a crime and informs the person of the charges against them. It takes place after a grand jury examines all potential evidence to decide whether a crime was committed. If the jury decides there is enough evidence, an indictment will come. In this case, the grand jury in New York City, which has been meeting since January, indicted Trump after hearing testimony from a number of witnesses. The specific charges are not yet known, as the indictment remains under seal. Trump is expected to be arraigned on Tuesday. After months of hearing evidence concerning a $130,000 payment to adult entertainer Stormy Daniels before the 2016 presidential campaign, the grand jury voted to charge Trump. The money was reportedly meant to buy her silence about the encounter she says they had years before. Trump's former personal lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, has said he coordinated with Trump on the payments to Daniels and to a second woman, Karen Dougal. The former president has denied the affair and any wrongdoing. He said the payment was to protect his reputation from a false accusation. While the particular allegations were not disclosed, multiple U.S. media sites speculated prior to Thursday's indictment that the probable charges pertained to Trump's reimbursement of Cohen, with prosecutors charging that he falsely labeled the payments as legal expenditures. The accusation, which is ordinarily a misdemeanor, could be elevated to a felony if prosecutors link the payment to violations of election law, which limits individual payments to political candidates to $2,700 and requires them to be made public. The payment to Daniels right before the 2016 vote could be considered an illegal campaign contribution. Trump also faces felony investigations related to the 2020 election and over the January 6, 2021 attack on the Capitol by his supporters. Trump has rejected Daniels' claim, and his lawyer has accused her of extortion. Calling himself a completely innocent person, Trump described the indictment as the latest in a series of steps aimed at destroying his Make America Great Again movement. The former president also accused the Democrat who conducted the probe, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, of trying to hurt his electoral chances. Trump has denied any wrongdoing, describing the measure as political persecution and election interference at the highest level in history. A judge is anticipated to unseal the Manhattan charges in the coming days, and Trump will be required to turn himself in to authorities. He will then appear in front of a judge and be formally charged, after which a decision will be made as to whether he should be freed on bond or taken into custody. Legal experts say that any potential trial is still at least more than a year away, raising the possibility that the former U.S. president could face a jury in a Manhattan courtroom during or even after the 2024 presidential campaign as he seeks a return to the White House. After his indictment, Trump's supporters gathered outside his Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago property in Florida to show their support for the former president.
It's totally, you've heard a witch hunt. It's not going to stop here. We've got to continue fighting for Trump because they're going to continue going after Trump because they know he can beat any Democrat they put out there. So they're going to play dirty. They're going to do all the games they can play to get rid of Trump.
Meanwhile, Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, who is thought to be strongly considering a 2024 presidential run, called the indictment an un-American move. In a tweet, he said the weaponization of the legal system to advance a political agenda turns the rule of law on its head. He also said Florida will not assist in an extradition request. In reaction to the indictment, Trump's former Vice President Mike Pence said in an interview that the indictment is an outrage.
Well, I think the unprecedented indictment of a former president of the United States on a campaign finance issue is an outrage. And it appears to millions of Americans to be nothing more than a political prosecution that's driven by a prosecutor who literally ran for office on a pledge to indict the former president.
Also, Trump's former United Nations ambassador and candidate for the Republican nomination, Nikki Haley, said in an interview that the indictment was more a political move than a search for justice.
You know, from everything I've seen from this New York district attorney is that this would be something he'd be doing for political points. And I think what we know is when you get into political prosecutions like this, it's more about revenge than it is about justice. And, you know, I think the country would be better off talking about things that the American public cares about than to sit there and have to deal with some revenge by some political people in New York.
Political analysts say that the indictment would put Trump in the spotlight once more and could potentially boost his election chances by focusing all the public attention back on the former president. They say Trump will try to turn his indictment to his advantage by stoking anger among core supporters over what they see as the weaponization of the justice system. Hundreds of thousands of people across France took part in protests and strikes to voice their discontent with Emmanuel Macron's use of constitutional executive powers to push through an unpopular raise of the pension age. Dubbed the Day of Action by French trade unions, Tuesday's protest was the 10th such mobilization since industrial action started in mid-January against the proposed reform, which includes raising retirement age from 62 to 64. A record number of security forces were also deployed across France amid fears of protests turning violent.
Faced with this situation, I have decided to deploy an unprecedented security force of 13,000 police officers and gendarmes, including 5,500 in Paris. 90 units of mobile forces will be deployed, a level of mobilization like never before.
As protesters staged generally peaceful marches across the country, violent clashes broke out in some areas with security forces using indiscriminate force, including tear gas canisters and water cannons to suppress protesters calling for Macron's ouster. The crisis has intensified due to controversy over policing tactics, with lawyers complaining about arbitrary arrests, injuries, and extreme use of force, fearing crowd control. Over 30 lawyers wrote an open letter to Le Monde on Monday, stating their great concern about what they called arbitrary arrests of hundreds of people. They accused the police of using the judicial system and arrests as a tactic to put people off protesting. Also on Saturday, Europe's leading human rights watchdog accused the French police of using excessive force against protesters. It said people angry at Macron's pension law had the right to protest peacefully and should have been protected from police brutality. Current protests are the most serious challenge to Macron since the Yellow Vest revolt 4 years ago. Polls show two-thirds of French people are against Macron's pension reform and the decision to push it through without a parliamentary vote. Leaders called on the government to suspend the controversial pension bill, suggesting the use of outside mediators to reach a consensus and end the chaotic situation in the country. But the government turned down the idea, saying the cabinet is willing to discuss other policy changes, but not to review the pension bill.
They refuse mediation with us. They refuse to discuss pensions. And you want me to tell you what the compromise would be? There is no compromise for the moment. The compromise is that the government doesn't even want to discuss pensions with us, while for the 10th time we have a day of mobilization, which is extremely well attended.
We have a government which has decided not to listen to the voice of society and decided to ignore the problems of the French people. So we said to ourselves, what is our future in a society like this, with a government that despises the voice of the young people?
Nearly 2 weeks after Macron forced a new pension law through parliament using a special provision, unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down.
We are going to continue the mobilizations. Today we are fighting for it to be really withdrawn, for this reform to be withdrawn. So if we can't go towards a pause and towards a mediation to discuss this reform again, we will continue the mobilizations and we will wait for the Constitutional Council to give us reason.
Public frustration at the French president's reform plans have evolved into broader anti-Macron sentiment.
We still see today in the polls that the French remain determined and are very largely in the majority. And it's Emmanuel Macron today who is losing popularity and not the social movement.
The protest movement against the pension reform has turned into the biggest domestic crisis of Macron's second mandate, with his approval rating at just 30%. Macron says the bill will come into force by the end of the year, arguing that the changes are necessary to prevent the pension system from collapse. But opponents say the overhaul is extremely unfair.
Millions of people across Germany have faced transport disruption in a cost-of-living mega-strike. Airports and bus and train stations across Germany were at a standstill. The strikes and walkouts caused disruption for millions of people during one of the largest walkouts in decades in Europe's biggest economy. The 24-hour warning strikes were called by the Verdi Union and Railway and Transport Union, IFOG. More than 400,000 transport workers have taken part in the industrial action. Flights at 8 major airports, including those in Munich, Frankfurt and Hamburg, were affected by the strikes. The German Airports Association said that around 380,000 travelers will not be able to take off on Monday.
Well, if I had known it, I wouldn't have come here and tried. I'm a bit shocked, actually. I didn't hear of it.
Long-distance railroad services were also suspended across Germany. Hamburg, which is Germany's largest port, was also hit by the walkouts. Employers have offered 5% more wages over a period of 27 months and a one-off payment of 2,500 euros. Unions are demanding a double-digit rise and have called the proposals unacceptable amid inflation, which reached 9.3% in February. Verdi has demanded a 10.5% pay raise for its members, citing rising energy and food costs. The strikes in Germany are part of major industrial actions, which have hit major European economies, as higher food and energy prices have dented living standards.
We are on strike today because inflation is just hitting us so hard. We have been losing wages in real terms for 2 years. We can no longer afford our lives. The heating costs are extreme. The gasoline is extreme. We have to think every time we go shopping, do we take this with us or not? We need the money to finance our lives, and that's why we are here.
Strikes are never positive because they paralyze the economy in the tourist sense of the word. Nothing moves anymore. We also have to say that the wage demands may certainly be attractive for the strikers. But one thing must not be ignored. These prices will be passed on. The companies and the state will pass on the wage increases in the form of fees and higher prices. That means that inflation with these effects will certainly remain high. That is part of the truth.
For years, Germany was heavily dependent on Russia for its gas.
It has now been particularly hit by higher prices, with inflation rates exceeding the euro area average in recent months. The walkout is the biggest in Germany since 1992. Persistent cost pressures have pushed central banks across Europe to a series of interest rate increases. However, Germany is not the only country to deal with massive strikes. In the UK, the government is engaged in pay disputes across several sectors as workers demand higher wages to keep pace with surging inflation, with strikes in schools, on railways, and in hospitals taking place on a regular basis.
But there is still what's called, as you know, core inflation, which is driven by underlying demand in the economy, things like pay settlements. That's more than 6%, which I think is going to be harder to bring down. So I think there is absolutely no room for complacency, and we need to really keep our eyes on the target.
Well, I don't believe they are overreacting. I think there is still inflationary pressure in the economy. I am very concerned about it, and I think we need to keep our eye on the ball. Only a week ago, we found that inflation had actually gone up from 10.1 to 10.4%. And I think that demonstrates there can be absolutely no room for complacency.
More than 1,400 security guards at Heathrow, the UK's busiest airport, are going on a strike over the Easter holidays. The strike action will force British Airways to cancel around 32 Heathrow Airport flights per day during the Easter holidays. Annual inflation in UK shops surged to its highest in at least 18 years in March. The British retail consortium food costs alone surged 15% from a year ago. And in France, it has witnessed days of strikes and protests over the controversial pension reforms. People are angry over the overhaul, which includes raising the retirement age from 62 to 64. Protests erupted after President Emmanuel Macron, almost 2 weeks ago, pushed the new pension law through Parliament using a special provision, sidestepping any vote. Unions have vowed no let-up in mass protests to get the government to back down. The World Bank has warned overlapping crises could lead to a sharp slowdown across the globe. Analysts have warned that things could get worse, with steeper declines in potential growth if a global financial crisis or recession occurs.
For me, the banking problem is only the effect, not the cause of the problem. Our problem in this financial world is dramatic over-indebtedness. And the states would all like the banks to take these government securities into their own custody. But when interest rates are raised dramatically, the securities are worth less because the prices also fall. You have to watch out for that. So the states should finally learn to make fewer debts, otherwise we will have an unsustainable problem in the long term.
Under mounting pressure from weeks-long protests, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has finally accepted to delay his infamous judicial reforms plan.
Therefore, out of national responsibility, out of the will to prevent the rift in the nation, I have decided to suspend the second and third readings of the law in this term of the Knesset in order to allow the time to reach that wide consensus ahead of legislation during the next Knesset.
Before the announcement, Israel's Army Chief of Staff called on the regime's forces to continue to do their duty in the face of bitter divisions over the judicial plan. That's amid reports of many Israeli reservists threatening not to serve while hundreds have already skipped reserve duties. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime's embassies in other countries and major ports across the occupied territories joined mass strikes against the reforms. Hundreds of thousands of Israelis have protested over a planned overhaul of the judiciary. The reforms are backed by Prime Minister Netanyahu and his pro-settler coalition and would enable them to pick judges and limit Supreme Court's power to strike down laws. Lawmakers have already passed a reform that strips the Attorney General of the power to declare the Prime Minister unfit for office. Critics say the plans for judicial reform will weaken democracy. Israel has no written constitution, so the Supreme Court should be a vital check on the cabinet, but the court's track record on Palestinian rights is already weak. Israel's Supreme Court entrenches the occupation and upholds laws blocking Palestinians' equal rights. It has never ruled out the legality of hundreds of Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank, which are illegal under international law. Over 6 million Palestinians live under Israeli occupation and draconian military law. Palestinian citizens have inferior rights, face unequal laws, and are banned from living in 900 towns. Also, Israel's far-right cabinet banned Palestinian flags and threatened to wipe out Palestinian villages and wants more illegal settlements on their land. That's while Israel is considered an apartheid regime by leading rights groups due to its systematic denial of the rights of Palestinians. For many, the far-right Israeli cabinet's plans to weaken the judiciary and entrench the prime minister's power are just another extension of occupation and unequal treatment. Netanyahu's proposed reforms seek to rob the Israeli Supreme Court of the power to overrule decisions made by the regime's new extremist cabinet and the Knesset. Mass protests have gripped the regime since it announced the plan in January. Tens of thousands of demonstrators have faced off police in the streets for the past 12 weeks. In reaction to the ongoing crisis, Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani has described the situation as a wildfire that is consuming Israel from within. He added that the attempt by Netanyahu to boost his own power has once again revealed internal fault lines in the Zionist society by stoking unprecedented street protests and clashes. According to the latest surveys, Israelis' trust in institutions has been deteriorating for some years, with only 35% of people saying they trusted the institutions quite a lot or very much in 2022.
To be honest, it's incredible. I can't believe what's going on in Israel. It's just madness. It's complete madness. All the authorities, all the people that have the from all the jurisdictions, from the militaries, from the financial sectors, from all the sectors in Israel, saying that this reform or whatever you call it, it is completely crazy. And Israel has become a very dangerous place to be in at the moment.
Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani also took Israel's Western allies, especially the U.S. and the U.K., to task for their continued support for Israel. He said it's ridiculous that the United States and Europe, especially Britain, continue to support a fake identity which is based on occupation and apartheid and use democracy as justification.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. God's Month. In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, Salam and welcome to the program. This is another episode of the series God's Month. Dear friends, Most of us worship God because of eagerness to enter paradise or fearing hell. But there are people who worship God because of loving Him. Imam Ali, peace upon him, says that those who worship God for paradise are merchants, and those who worship God for fear of hell are slaves, while those who worship God for love of Him are the freemen. The freemen are those who call God out of love and praise Him for the bounties that He has bestowed upon us. Some people call God only to the extent of their needs, but those who call Him out of love and gratitude are never bored of remembering His greatness and praiseworthy attributes. This is like a child who enjoys mentioning the good traits of his parents and boasting of them. When we raise our hands for prayer, we often remember our shortages and utter them one by one. But as a manner of prayer and supplication, it is good to mention the bounties that God has bestowed upon us and thank Him for them. This kind of praise and thanksgiving will distance us from negative view on life. If we start supplication with praising God and mentioning His bounties, we will have a positive outlook at life and the world and will cause increase of bounties. The second infallible Imam of the Prophet's progeny, Imam Hassan Mujtaba, peace upon him, says, "I guarantee that if a person is satisfied with Allah's satisfaction and nothing crosses his heart except Allah's satisfaction, that all his prayers will be heard." Despair is a feature of Satan who always tries to transfer it to others. Many problems may lead to despair in God, and every sin can drag us toward disappointment. Praying and supplication are the ways of overcoming despair. When we call God and mention His infinite attributes and bounties, we are in fact reminding ourselves what good things we have and what a powerful and merciful God we have. This revives hope in our hearts and will cause us to pray more. If we are hopeful and are optimistic of God, we will pray for changing of our status quo. A few persons asked Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, "Why do we pray but it is not heard?" The Imam answered, "You call the one whom you do not know." Imam Mahdi, may God expedite his reappearance, in Dua Iftitah, continues praising God with the words, "All praise belongs to Allah, who has no rival to dispute with Him." Some non-Abrahamic religions deem that Satan is Allah's rival. They think that good and evil are two equal and opposite forces that are always in fight with each other, while neither of them is able to thwart or even decrease the other one's effect. Some other schools maintain that God is the source of positive energy and Satan is the generator of negative one. This is while Satan is only a creature of God. Allah is the one and only God who has no second to dispute with Him. Ayah 22 of Surah Anbiya reads, "Had there been gods in them, heavens and the earth, other than Allah, they would surely fallen apart. Clear is Allah, the Lord of the throne, from what they describe." The supplications that we have received from our prophets and imams, blessings of God upon them, are generally aimed at increasing our cognizance of Allah. Some of them, like Dua Iftitah, are indeed the course of knowing God and monotheism at a very high level. Imam Mahdi in this supplication teaches us to think reasonably. Interestingly, he applies clear proof. In part of the supplication, the Imam teaches ideological subjects in simple phrases. And there is no similar to him, and there is no support to assist him. He has overcome all mighty ones with his might, and all great ones have been humbled before his greatness. So his power reaches whatever he wishes. Sure, there is no barrier to Allah's willpower. No one can stand against his will or even dispute him and argue with him. Everyone and everything are his subjects and under his dominance. Whatever he wishes, he rules, and he will not be taken to ask for his action. Rather, it is he who takes to task others for what they have done. Ayah 23 of Surah Anbiya reads, "He is not questioned concerning what he does, but they are questioned."
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترك همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution in Imam Ridha alayhi salam shrine on the occasion of the beginning of the Iranian New Year 1402, that's March 21st, 2023. The enemies of the Islamic system also talk about change. They too are seeking change, but the change they are after is the exact opposite of what we have in mind. They talk about this change, and unfortunately, some people in the country follow them or imitate them and express the same matters with different expressions. For example, changing the constitution or changing the structure of the Islamic system. This is what the foreigners say. This is what the enemies talk about. However, the elements inside the country sometimes repeat those words out of neglect, carelessness, or sometimes they might have other motives. The thing that the enemy is seeking and is labelling as change is to change the identity of the Islamic Republic. The enemies of Islamic Iran are the arrogant powers and Zionism, and they are against the Islamic Republic's identity. When they talk about change, transformation, structural change, a revolution and things of that sort, their intention is to change the identity of the Islamic Republic itself. Their aim is to eliminate everything that reminds people of the revolution and of Islam, that is, genuine Islam, revolutionary Islam.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The They are against repeating Imam Khomeini's name. They are against any talk about Imam Khomeini's teachings. They are against the issue of Wilayatul Faqih, the guardianship of the Islamic jurist. They are against the 22nd of Bahman celebrations. They are against Quds Day. They are against elections in the Islamic Republic and the way that the people enthusiastically participate in them. They are against anything that is a strong sign of revolutionary Islam in the Islamic Republic. They want to change these things. When they speak of structural change and transformation, their goal is to eliminate these things. All of these things, which in fact happen to be the strengths of our country. They happen to be the strengths of the Islamic Republic. In short, the enemy's goal is to turn our Islamic democracy into a government that global arrogance wants. They want a government to gain power here in Iran that will act according to what the arrogant desire. This includes either an authoritarian government of one person who obeys their orders, or a seemingly democratic Western-style government, which is in fact a democracy of lies and deceit. They want this kind of government to come to power, under their control and in their clutches, so it will act according to their will and remain under their command. This is what they are after.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Option for today and a better tomorrow. IRIB English Radio. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Large field kitchen has become a usual scene in Ramadan every year since the war started in Syria. An NGO named Saad has been cooking warm meals for the needy in the fasting month for over a decade now. This year, they have expanded their massive kitchens in four Syrian cities, making over 20,000 meals for free.
This is our 11th year. This year is different from all previous ones as we face earthquakes in Aleppo. Our kitchens were established directly at that time, even before Ramadan. People's needs are doubling this year. People depend on us now every year. About 20,000 meals are produced daily.
The organization depends on donations, both cash and food supplements. Volunteers arrive early in the day to prepare, plan, and cook a specific meal to be distributed before sunset. Zahra says every capable Syrian should shoulder some responsibility to help others during this crisis.
I feel related to this initiative in Ramadan every year. I can't imagine myself not helping during this month. It feels incredibly good to know I'm helping in feeding thousands of people. It's a responsibility and an expression of love to my people.
We start working every day at 9 a.m. We prepare the ingredients of the meal, such as meat, rice and vegetables. We produce the meals, wrap them and distribute them to the needy, mainly in poor areas and earthquake-affected parts of Syria.
The recent earthquakes exacerbated the already tough economic conditions in Syria. The UN says 70% of the population needs humanitarian assistance, while 6.8 million people have been internally displaced. Syrians have endured almost all factors that could bring a person to the brink of poverty, from foreign-backed war and terrorism to U.S. and Western economic sanctions and the recent devastating earthquakes. In this